Season 6, Episode 6, Scope Creep and Snag Areas. The power of the beep is getting to Trage's head, says Alan. This is a very serious podcast, Trage protests. The cause for the beep is revealed, much to the merriment of the podcast crew. Trage tells a story about a receptionist at a law firm whose scope creep to take on more than she should backfires. Sarah reports on a media story about the covert reenactment of a congested hospital ER system during a ministerial visit. Alan exclaims, like the boy who cried wolf. Enjoy this episode. It's a cracker.
Welcome to the system.
Yeah. One, two, get this speed off with D. And we're gonna bust it up like this. I'm crushing empty bourbon cans with my dirty hands, poisoned by devil's weed, dreaming of foreign lands. Ever since my very spark of life, I've been caught in this astrological plight.
Hello, and welcome to the Wywork Podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
There you go. And Sarah.
Snag and drag. Bunker snag and drag is so, pulling a fish out of the ocean.
So I think this power of the beep has got to Trajan's head. So yes. We're going to test him, aren't we?
There are snaggeries races.
We agreed that we were going to test him. Are we going to test him now?
How about this? Snag, drag, and bag.
Beep. Oh, yeah, we have to beep.
Look, I didn't make this up. Oh, my gosh. And there's a snag drag queen, too.
We tightrope that.
I didn't create it. I'm just reflecting.
We unpack the
contemporary. Contemporary.
You've got to have a laugh. You've got to have a conversation. And we look at the, who quoted unpleasant realities? That was Sarah.
Drag and bag, baby.
She's not letting go.
Not letting go of this one.
She's got hold of the snag drag.
I really don't. I really don't.
It's like, yeah, so this is the thing. And this was a very serious podcast. Because we address, you know, those unsavory, unpleasant realities, as Sarah likes to call it.
But well, it doesn't have to be unpleasant.
I know, it doesn't have to, but unfortunately, more often than not, we discover the unpleasant realities of work.
Trage, you have told us a lot of fascinating cases about the English legal system, and I believe you've got another one to tell us about.
Just can't get enough. And again, these are transferable. These cases, it's irrelevant which country, but for some reason, I just enjoy the content coming out of ye olde
English. What is it with English lawyers? They just get into so much trouble.
And specifically English lawyers.
On the dance floor and all everywhere.
But on this occasion, there was no issue with the English lawyers per se, but support staff, a receptionist. And it got me thinking about just how difficult some people can be in the workplace and just how inadequate they are. This case just blew my mind. The facts are simple and they should be simple. There was a job advertised in England in a law firm in Croydon, which is just south of London for those who are interested. I know it very well. My mate lived there. And the job was simple. It's a receptionist position. Now, Alan, you've worked in the private sector for long enough to know the receptionist's job.
It's a very important job.
It's a critical job, but what's the most important aspect of a receptionist's job? If I said to you one thing.
Greeting people.
Thank you.
Yeah. So customer service. Yeah.
I would have taken answering the phone, greeting people.
It's more than answering the phone. You've got to answer the phone in a way that makes the client feel welcome.
Thank you. And can you add on more? But this was the primary, in fact, the only job description.
Well, you're the first point of contact.
Thank you.
You represent the branding, the culture.
Keep going.
The relationship, the formation of a new relationship, the ability to meet needs.
The maintaining of an existing relationship.
Yes.
So the core duty, so what they're all the relevant cultural aspects, but the core duty, so in other words, what did this person have to do intellectually and physically was?
Interpret a call coming and physically activate it.
There was a list.
And respond. Yep.
And the interpretation required this. It was a list, and the line was drawn in half. On the left-hand side of the column was the names of all of the partners, the senior associates, the billers, all of those responsible for billing. And there was a sign on top of the list that said, when a client or a customer calls, do not patch them into anyone on this list. Instead, the corresponding line relates to the support staff for that person. So you are to only answer...
In England, I think they say an associate, don't they?
That's it. Yeah. And so the support, they call them support staff, or let's say associate. So if I'm wanting to speak to Mr. Jones, who is the in charge of trusts, the receptionist's job was not to plug, to patch me into Mr. Jones, but to the support staff. So yep. That's it.
So what happened? Tell us about the case.
So this person is successful in the interview. This particular worker was to report at 9 a.m. She reported at 8:30 a.m. Okay,
all right.
Earnest, early, still 30 minutes early, but be that as it may. The first thing this person did was, after she was greeted, was look down and notice some leaves just in the corner, just before the office door. So she's taken it upon herself to ask, where's the vacuum cleaner? And the practice manager has said, no, your job isn't to clean. We have cleaners for that. Your job is to, and I'll show you what your job is, it's to be a receptionist. No, these leaves have to be cleaned. So this is within the first few seconds. So she's taken upon herself to find little Henry. In England, they have the little Henry vacuum cleaners. They've got a little Henry face. So
do they have Toto loos like Japan?
No, not quite, not in England. So she's going to stop that. So immediately there's this awkward moment where this person who's barely been in the office for a few minutes has now decided to vacuum up just a handful of leaves and saying, I need to do this because it's an OHS issue. And then as she's doing it, she goes, I think
I'm just going to
finish that up. Yeah, that's the first episode. Then throughout the course of the day, this person decides to move some reams of paper. And her job, remember, was to answer phones.
Yes.
And the practice manager said, no, leave that paper alone. Somebody else will collect that paper. It's due to be collected by someone else. She says, no, I need to. Where's your trolley? There's no trolley. So she's put on a chair. So in the meantime, she's complaining about her back being sore because she's moved the papers. So this worker is doing work outside of her scope. So they were regarded as irritating or annoying things. But the clincher,
so that's self-indulged scope creep, because I often hear about employees complaining about scope creep, where people keep asking them to do things that they believe are outside of their substantive job role. You're saying she's causing scope creep. She's initiating.
Tell me more about this scope creep.
Scope creep, yeah. So when you're you're there because you're there, because you're a bum in seat, you know, people might just come to you. They know you to solve this problem. So they just come to you and ask you to solve problem X, Y, and Z too. And you have a relationship with them. So you try to satisfy their needs, but it might not be within your purview or your skill set or your capabilities, but somehow you want to get by and it can cause some problems.
Mm.
You know, I think for the role in a lot of businesses for a work health safety officer who is supposed to implement strategies, since you guys are in the safety space, I'll give a safety example. And yet they're often approached for everything from training and education to strategy and consultative advice at a high level in safety legislation, were supposed to implement some fundamentals.
We often see it the other way around, where someone's got a substantive role and then they're told by someone more senior in the management structure, you can do safety as well. You can add safety
onto
your...
Scope creep.
Putting into this, so these are some of the things they found. That she was keen to volunteer to move boxes of photocopying paper when this was not required. So not required is the first one. Then with
keen
the
to volunteer keen is a little bit different than you know, against orders not to do it. So there's a...
Is
it? Okay, all right.
She felt it was imperative to tidy up the leaves when she was told not to.
Okay, there it says she was told not to.
She was, and this segues into what you've said, because she said she was of the view that the leaves were a health and safety hazard.
Okay.
So it is this scope creep. No, I'm sticking with scope creep. But so these things were frustrating and annoying. But the clincher was this particular employee did not like the sound of the law firm's name.
What? So they're the branding strategist now too?
So,
marketing and branding strategist?
So she was told as part of the duties that you are to say good morning and then
XYZ firm,
yeah.
She didn't like it, so she improvised.
What did she call the business?
Welcome to the system.
So we're just highlighting, and I love this expression, scope creep. So we're having, I would have used the phrase overzealous or overcommitted worker, but be that as it may, the relevant scoping of work tasks were specific, and that was to be a receptionist and answer the phone and refer people as designated. A one-page instruction. Let me make this clear. However, the biggest issue the firm had with this newly employed person was in relation to performance or competence of inability to say the firm's name when answering the phone to clients. She explained it was difficult. It was a difficult name to repeat over the phone. The name Wickenham, Hereford, Shepherd and Son, the tribunal said, certainly is a bit of a mouthful. I'll repeat that. Wickenham, Hereford, Shepherd and Son.
However, let me try. You didn't stumble. You said that quite well.
I said it already. Yeah,
let me try.
And that would be a mouthful for me. So even though the court itself said, look, it's a bit of a mouthful, they felt that this was not a difficult or unreasonable task for a receptionist to perform.
Alan, try it.
I'll have to read it, I think.
Shepherd and Wickenham, Hereford. Good morning, Wickenham, Hereford, Shepherd and Son.
So what did she say?
Well.
Oh, we don't know.
She explained to the court that for whatever reason she was unable to answer the phone and therefore she didn't say it.
She didn't say it at all. I thought she changed the name of it.
So she didn't say it to the satisfaction of the practice's requirement.
What did she say?
She said it was a mouthful. Most importantly, they didn't say what she said. She just said that she didn't want to say it that way. This is an example of the difficulty.
So Aussies would go, yeah, wiki mate, or something like that, right? Wickenham, Hereford, Sanford and Son.
But you think about a lot of people when they get their job, if they're struggling with learning something new, they'll practice. They'll practice at home. And why wouldn't you just practice saying the name?
Well, the court did not accept her credibility because the court was of the view that this particular person refused to accept her own obvious shortcomings. And this is my point about this right from the beginning. This is the definition, quintessentially, of a difficult employee. So you can imagine where this went. This employee alleged wrongful dismissal and bullying and harassment and so on and so forth. Putting all those things aside, I'm more interested in what you've said before, this scoping. So we know of people like this. We say, look, can you please perform A? And they go off on a frolic and decide to perform B, C and D. And then how does one manage that?
So I think what you're getting at is that we talk a lot about work design, systems design to try and support employees with some sense of benevolence, some sense of health, care, well-being. But what happens if it's occurring in reverse? Like you hear about reverse bullying to managers from an employee, reverse conflict where somebody's really causing harm in an organization saying, this is way too hard to manage. What are my obligations here?
That's it. And Alan, I think you nailed it by saying, well, you know, you would say, all right, this is a mouthful. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to practice, and I'll get this right. But the person refused to accept her own shortcomings. And this, to me, I think, defines a difficult person and a difficult set of circumstances because they saw nothing wrong. Now, Sarah, this is important. They said nothing wrong. They saw nothing wrong with not pronouncing the name of the law firm correctly. Does that make sense?
But I have a sense where this is going. I think, would I be right in guessing that she took it further?
She took it further. Mm. She took action because they pretty much very early on decided that, look, this isn't working, so they decided not to retain
and let her go.
Did she claim an injury or something with the lifting of papers and vacuuming of leaves?
She alleged, but didn't provide evidence. She had a letter from a physiotherapist dating back to 2015. This was only heard a couple of months ago, which was redacted to some extent. So it wasn't a forceful, and even the court considered her claim for back injuries as being just more of an add-on to the central claim of alleged harassment and bullying and not because of not being able to pronounce the name correctly.
She didn't have a speech impediment. There's no indication of that. No.
Right.
She
so it wasn't
felt that she felt victimized because she was not answering the phone to the satisfaction of the firm. And more importantly, she felt victimized because she was being criticized for patching people in contrary to the
protocol.
Yeah.
So I wonder how long she actually was there. How long did she last?
No, it didn't last very long.
Yeah.
And so the claims were dismissed. So a claim for dismissal, they were all dismissed. And that was the end of it.
And the cost to defend this by the time you go through this? My goodness.
Harassment claim, disability claim, all of these were just hosed out. Now, remember, these are tribunals and she was self-represented, but it's more of the difficulty. And indeed, and in this case, getting back to one of our very first few episodes about I don't have to like you, like as a person.
But respect you, Alan said.
Yeah, and that really rings true because one of the grievances the applicant had here was that she felt one of the employees, the practice manager, was asking too much personal information about her personal life.
Mm.
And guess what the question was? In the conversation, during the small talk, there was a discussion about walking. And this particular person felt that the practice manager was probing and prying into her private life.
Oh, gosh.
Because she enjoyed walks.
So, and like if I said, what are you doing this weekend? I'm probing into your personal life this weekend, right?
It's just food for thought for our listeners to know that whilst you don't have a crystal ball, but you may find yourself in a difficult or awkward situation, and this case just highlights that.
So this case is an example of what is extremely common, and I see on a regular basis, is when employers have often a new employee.
Yep, brand new.
And within the space of 6 months, the new employee has a claim, and the claim, very easy to see the claim as spurious.
Yes.
And maybe even fabricated. It's often useful to do a bit of a background check to see if similar claims have been made by this person in the past. But I think the experience, at least that I have with the clients that I've worked with, is that the quickest, most cost-effective way to handle this is exactly the way that law firm handled it, which is treat the claims as serious.
Yes.
Treat the claims. Don't exercise any bias.
Yep.
Try and investigate them in an unbiased way, and respond in an unbiased way, in a balanced way, to whatever the allegation is, which is extremely hard when you think the allegation is spurious.
Indeed. So 8 days. So she lasted 8 days in this employment. and so the unfair dismissal claim was obviously dismissed, but not before costs.
A lot of costs in responding to those allegations. So you would have been talking tens of thousands of dollars at least.
And what happens then when you have groups, cohorts of workers who corroborate and coordinate spurious events?
Yeah.
So I've got on my phone here a little story about news here about healthy hospital staff pose as fake patients for the Victorian minister's visit, an investigation confirms, right? So it is just media. I'm not looking at case law right now. It's just news media. But it says the health minister, Marianne Thomas, says 10 people who were not at all unwell were inside the area health's urgent care clinic during her visit so that they could, I'm sure, represent what they feel are often busy times.
Stop it. This is just insane.
It has confirmed that the staff, and I won't even name it, you can look it up if you're really keen, this area health posed as patients during the visit. They were registered as patients in this registration system, and the registrations were cancelled the minute I left, after I left. So the deception, deception included a staff member arriving to the clinic by ambulance during her visit, and one person did not require any medical treatment, and so they were taking up an ambulance, right? Another staff member was lying on the trolley.
So you've heard of the expression hire a friend. So this is hire an actor.
Now, we use that in university education. Yes. We do simulations and modeling and sometimes hire people different. To be actors, yeah. Right? This is during a minister's visit. Now, I suspect, if I had to unpack this, I suspect it's because they wanted to reflect the realities of their work and see, you know, this is what I really must deal with. But it just actually wasn't happening during the minister's visit, and they decided to create a simulation and a what if, like good design.
But maybe it was a simulation. Maybe that's what it is.
The usually a simulation people know, right? People okay. involved are informed, and when you have somebody not informed, like a minister in the visit.
So can you imagine this? So we're sitting around the conference. I said, listen, Alan, Sarah, listen, here's the thing, right? The minister's coming today.
Yeah.
A bit short on patients, right? Look.
But we need to get this extra funding, and gosh,
can you
really got to
can you just put a gown on?
Put a gown, come on.
Scope. Listen, I need you to wear
Joe will bring you in an ambulance, in an ambo, mate.
And look, this isn't real blood. It's just tomato sauce, but I need to wrap this around. Now, I know this is it. We're just talking about scoping of work. No, this is a reverse.
Scope creep.
And some plaster on one of the actors.
Yeah.
You know,
plaster up their
leg. Yeah.
Can we put this cast on? But why? It's a
simulation. We just need to argue our point. We need to argue our point.
We need to do it because it's not a good look.
Did they do credible wailing? Because it's an emergency ward, so you need some wailing.
And then is it the boy who cried wolf? Because then somebody does have an accident, arrives in the ambulance, and like, yeah, that's just Joe having a laugh. Yeah.
this is real blood. It's not tomato sauce.
He's not having a stroke, but gosh, good acting, Alan. Great acting.
Yeah, great acting.
No, this is really a catheter. Here's the thing. So I don't know how to process anything you've just said there.
All I know is, it's there. It's like a Seinfeld episode gone wrong. Can't you picture Kramer doing this?
Look, this is fair game. Well, sorry, but this is fair.
Imagine the workers' compensation claim if one of them got injured. During the action of acting.
You know, we also got to get involved in this. Actors' equity, because non-union...
non-union paid activity.
You're not an actor, you're a nurse.
Industrial law, work health safety law.
This is a lot bigger than just simply a ministerial visit. This is gaining potentially an advantage through... I knew you'd appreciate it, right? Can I ask what the source is? What was the news source?
Australian News, The Guardian.
Okay.
That's some credibility.
This is good. It's not like something on Facebook or just someone...
No, I don't even Facebook. I'm never a Facebook prowler.
What you're saying...
It's so good, right? It's such a good story. Like, really?
And you know what? It is work, and it's work-related, and it's in the workspace. It's not someone in the park pretending. This is on work. Someone's getting paid.
Okay, I'm double checking publication date. It's not the 1st of April. Like, you know how sometimes they put fake news out?
Is this
1st of May 2024, and the visit occurred on the 9th of August 2023.
I just can't believe this. I'm just curious.
You think the journalist might have spun it a bit?
Yeah.
embellished a bit.
I don't know. The minister says her office has investigated this and found this to be true. She has decided the staff will not be sanctioned, however. So there must be a story that they were really trying to replicate the realities of their work because they're overworked.
Which we're talking about, really.
Is it an ethical issue? Well, it's misleading behaviour.
But were other real patients around while this was happening?
That's the point.
No, but I think it was. I think that they were around. They were trying to embellish and add more bodies on bums on seats, right?
Yeah, now that's...
Because they posed as fake patients.
Was it a mixture of patients?
That's what I'm saying. Because it says, okay, listen. They posed as fake.
Doctor's gowns.
They posed as fake patients to make their urgent care clinic appear busier. So that must be among real patients.
Did the real patients know?
Yeah.
Did they play along?
Will the real patients stand up?
Will they? So.
This is just the funniest thing I've ever heard in a long time. I mean, again, it's comedy, right? It's it's something from a sitcom. Oh, we just got to pretend. You know what? This is Nikolai Gogol-esque. So Nikolai Gogol, what? One of my favourite authors, a Russian author, would the nose, the overcoat, like the one with the detachable nose, and it ran off from because it couldn't stand the sight of being on this particular pompous public servant. So no. So he wrote these really out there, out of the box stuff, but they were just unreal. But they're all sort of based on some truth.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a
certain. So like a Pinocchio symbol is what you're kind of telling me. This is
precisely.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very fable-esque.
I've got one more thing to show you guys, and this is a photograph that I took, right? And it is in a medical clinic, and I'll leave that brand X because I was just shocked to see this. Now, my son sprained his thumb. Rugby, what do you expect, right? Back to the rugby.
Surprise, just a sprain.
Just a sprain. We thought it was broken initially because they couldn't touch it and it was too sore. But once the swelling went down, we could realize it was stable and whatnot. So it's a sprain, grade 2 sprain. And, you know, our book, Healthcare Insights, Taylor and Francis, talks about the consumer experience. Then it talks about the healthcare practitioner experience to have empathy. And I empathize that they're probably short-staffed, running behind, et cetera. But this is not the solution if you're asking about design strategy. And then third is the work design strategist. And we don't agree, so this is something, Trish. They're vulnerable, I have to say. So I had to go to this medical clinic because the school, I did the right thing to report, and I said, I absolutely do not blame you. This is voluntary participation in sport, and we realize there are inherent risks with playing sport. I have no complaint whatsoever that this injury occurred. I'm simply letting you know because I realize you probably have to write an incident report, right? So then they said, well, of course, we need the medical certificate of release. I said, I can tell you right now, it's a sprain. You know, we thought initially that it was a break, but we can tell now in a couple of days after we can touch and play with the thumb that it's a sprain. He'll be all right. And what's the doctor actually going to do, right? So we have a congested medical system, right? I don't want to go to that doctor, but I'm trying to satisfy what the requests are. Yeah. So the request says, go to the doctor. What for? If the doctor tells me to get imaging, even then, so what? If there's no complication, they'll simply tell me to immobilize it. What did I do immediately as a mum? Pick up my son, go get, as a, after hours, go get a soft spica splint. I mean, immobilized it with that, checked on pain management, looked at some slow progressive ranging. What was the doctor going to do? And I have taken a place that I did not want to take, that my son didn't want to take, to go get a medical appointment for a person who says they don't really want to hear any of our other issues whatsoever. Please stay away because we're too damn busy. And then have to get a piece of paperwork. And I said to the guy, I just need your paperwork. You should go get imaging. Why should I get imaging when if there's no complications? How about I do this? How can I negotiate this? If it doesn't improve in the next 5 days, I will just get your order now for imaging and I'll go get imaging, but just go ahead and write it, but I won't fulfill it unless I need to. Yeah. That's what our book's about, the silliness of decision-making just because we're familiar with routine practices and not actually thinking smartly about what the system needs and what an individual needs. This is just silly. Just tear it down and start from the beginning. Yeah. Now, in New Zealand, they're looking at having, and they may have this, that some GPs have like a triage nurse.
I was about to say triage.
And then they have an educator as well who, if the doctor might prescribe something or diagnose something, then you go into this room and the nurse educator can continue to explain, or the clinical educator can explain what the implications are, what this means, manage the time, help case manage, which does not happen. I'm so disappointed in case management in Australia right now in healthcare versus when I trained back in my day, right? How much emphasis is on good case management? Very poorly happens now. Very poorly now. Yeah, but look, because we have to go congest the system and getting a report on something we didn't need with an order we didn't want, and I didn't want to, charge more Medicare dollars to it either. Just give us a couple of days, we can figure this out. Anyway, that was my shocker of healthcare system this week.
I was going to say, Alan, you've got pretty cool shoes, mate.
I noticed those, by the way. They are pretty groovy.
What you thinking? You jumped up in the system.
Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to to the system. Yeah, welcome to the system.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.
What you thinking? You jumped up in the system.
Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system. Welcome to the system.
Yeah, welcome to the system.